Thank you for joining KLZ 560 and our exceptional partners at Extreme Auto Repair of Parker in honoring God and country. This is the Crawford Broadcasting Company.
It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important story.
Out here in Colorado, we had a sex education bill that was passed. It was signed by the governor and put into law. I just can't believe what is happening to public education.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
We are now using policy that if you don't affirm something, that they use policy then to take away your businesses.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Kids are just being bombarded with darkness.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
You know, we need to get back to letting our kids be kids.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
Indeed, it is hump day, and I am Kim Munson, and we're going to have some great conversations today. We've got a great show planned for you today. And if you know people that don't get up really early to listen to the show, they've got a couple of other options. They can listen to the show from 10 to 11 p.m. right here on KLZ 560 every day. Or go to my website, kimmunson.com. That's M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And we have the show recaps there, and you can actually just click on that, and the show is embedded there. You can listen to it there. So be sure and do that. Thrilled today in the second segment, we will be chatting with Sherry Pfeiff. You know her. She is with Complete Colorado doing very important reporting work here in Colorado. And we'll be talking about all of this outside of the Colorado money coming in regarding trying to get you to vote for Proposition CC, which is taking away the excess tax refunds. I hate to use the word excess, but we'll talk a little bit more about that. I spoke last night at the Denver GOP, had their very first inaugural After Hours event. And it was really fun. There were people from all different ages. I think people that had not been really active in anything. And they were there to learn about Prop CC, which I talked about. And Chris Cook had mentioned to me that we needed to clarify on Prop CC when we say that what they're asking for is permission to keep our tax refunds forever. It's not that tax refund that you see at the bottom of your tax form. What it is that with TABOR, the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, there's three components of it. And one of it is that if the state takes in more revenue above a certain formula, and that formula is population plus inflation, so we say, hey, the state can grow that much, the amount above that, they need to refund back to the taxpayers unless we give them permission to keep it for some reason. And so the question on the ballot is, can they keep those refunds forever? So if Colorado economy grows and those tax revenues are significant, that should be paid back to us, and they're asking that they keep that forever. And I thought that was important that Chris asked me to make that clarification, because there is a little bit of a difference, and I hadn't really thought about that, so that was really important to do. But I want to say thank you to the team, producer Steve, behind the board. It's always great when I see you back there.
Good morning.
And Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, thank you to all of you and you listeners. Thank you. Thank you for listening, and you each are treasured. You're valued. You've got a purpose today. Strive for excellence. And take care of heart, soul, mind, and body every day, and it makes it easier to live a good life. And so really appreciate all of you. And so, the third and fourth segment, Dr. Tom Kranewitter will be joining us regarding the New York Times 1619 Project, which is another way to try to divide us. And it's really important that we understand that. So it's going to be really fascinating on that. So let's see. Let's jump right in here to our inspiration. And Walter Williams, you may know him. He's an American economist, commentator. He's an academic. He is the John M. Olin Distinguished Professor of Economics at George Mason University, as well as syndicated columnist and author known for his classical, liberal, and libertarian conservative views. And he is also Black. And Walter Williams, this is his roadmap out of poverty. Complete high school. Get a job, any kind of job. Get married before having children, and be a law-abiding citizen. Among both black and white Americans so described, the poverty rate is in the single digits. So I thought that was very inspirational and very, very important advice. Today's funnies, I pulled five Murphy's Laws, Steve. And, you know, there are some of them that make you chuckle. Number one, anything that can go wrong will go wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Number two, beauty is only skin deep, but ugly goes to the bone.
Okay.
Never argue with a fool. People might not know the difference.
Way to put that on a, you know, plaster that over the halls of Congress.
The other line always moves faster.
True.
And anything you try to, this is a Jason McBride one. Anything you try to fix will take longer and cost more than you thought.
A lifelong do-it-yourselfer?
Yeah. I think
no debate.
Yeah, Jason was doing some work on one of the cars or something, and it's like, I need a part. So anyway, yes, anything you fix will take longer and cost more than you thought. So let's go ahead and jump in here. First of all, we talked about the NBA in China yesterday. And Patty, you know, she is always working that we are telling the truth, that we're searching for clarity. And there was one little thing that I said that we weren't sure that the NBA actually asked the Houston Rockets general manager, Daryl Morey, to take down his tweet that said, I think, you know, stand for freedom, you know, support the Hong Kongers. So we thought we better make sure on this. So the National Basketball Association Commissioner Adam Silver addressed criticism that his response to a controversy over a tweet by a team executive deferred too much to Beijing's views, even as a Chinese state broadcaster said it wouldn't air two games scheduled for this week. Mr. Silver was addressing the controversy over a momentary show of support for Hong Kong anti-government protesters by Houston Rockets general manager Daryl Morey in a tweet last Friday. Mr. Silver said the league's initial statement about China left people angered and confused in a nod to criticism that it deferred too much to Beijing's views. An initial statement by the NBA over the weekend said the league recognized that Mr. Morey's now deleted tweet deeply offended many of our friends and fans in China, which is regrettable. An extra line in a Chinese version of the statement expressed extreme disappointment in Mr. Morey's inappropriate comments. I'm going to stop right there. How much freedom of speech is being tapped down because people are offended, Steve?
I can visualize, you know, we always talk about taken behind the woodshed, that Mr. Morey was literally escorted to, you know, behind the woodshed by the NBA and thrashed.
Okay. Continue on, though. Earlier Tuesday, China Central Television said that its sports channel decided to suspend broadcast arrangements for the two games and immediately investigate all cooperation and exchanges involving the NBA. So do we not see China a really heavy hand right here with China? And taking away the freedom, we talk about freedom versus force, force versus freedom. They're taking away the freedom for their citizens to get to watch an NBA game if they want to. Next, in making its announcement, CCTV cited Mr. Silver's statement a day earlier defending Mr. Morey's right to free expression. The move follows others that could damage the NBA's business in China, including a halt to sales of some Rockets merchandise in the country. In a statement issued in Japan on Tuesday, shortly before a preseason game between the Rockets and the Toronto Raptors, Mr. Silver said the NBA's statement had left people angered, confused, or unclear on who we are. He rejected criticism that the NBA deferred interest to China out of concern for its business interest there. Read between the lines. Money. Okay? This is far more than growing our business, Mr. Silver said. Values of equality, respect, and freedom of expression have long defined the NBA and will continue to do so. Mr. Silver said the NBA couldn't adjudicate political differences between the U.S. and China, and that the NBA will not put itself in a position of regulating what players, employees, and team owners say about those issues. CCTV has broadcast NBA games for three decades. The company has since the tweet said it would suspend broadcast of Rockets games months after signing a five-year extension with the NBA worth $1.5 billion. Okay, my question yesterday is, we've looked at all this globalism And the globalists have said, hey, we're going to have a kumbaya moment. We're not going to have any borders. There's no differences between us. But yet they also talk about all the differences between us when it's convenient for them. But, you know, the idea was that we would trade together and that because we were trading together, we'd get to know each other better. And I say probably on individuals to individual, that's true. But when you look at government the difference in government ideologies, it is not. And so we as Americans, because we are such a generous people, we have gone out and we've fought for freedom and fought against tyranny in other lands. And we have not taken the land. We have come home. And typically in World War II, all we asked for was land to bury our soldiers that were there.
And then instituted the Marshall Plan to help them rebuild.
And that's what we did. And so the question as we look at this, what China is trying to do with the NBA, are we exporting freedom or are we importing tyranny? And I think that that's a very important question as we look at this whole globalist agenda that has been really at the forefront for many generations, well, I'd say for the last 40 years. And Donald Trump comes in and he says, make America great again and America first. And the globalists, you know, their hair is on fire right now. But this, I think, is a perfect example. Are we exporting freedom or are we importing tyranny? Steve.
When you're a player on the world stage, and there are lots of them, and you go out on the world stage and you embarrass yourself, where do you ever look inward? And I'm referring to China. Why this bullyism that they maintain is the way to go? And do you ever stop and compare yourself to the rest of the free world and say, well, maybe this isn't so much the right way to go? Or maybe this isn't a hill to die on? I don't know. I don't get it.
Well, I would say that, you know, socialism, communism ultimately doesn't care about the everyday hardworking person.
That's true.
And so that's the problem there. There was one other thing that I wanted to mention, and we're just about out of time. And that is it came across the wire early this morning about three people have been awarded the Nobel Prize in Chemistry for the lithium-ion batteries. This is from, NPR. And the lithium-ion batteries have revolutionized our lives and are used in everything from mobile phones to laptops and electric vehicles, the Nobel Committee said. Through their work, this year's chemistry laureates have laid the foundation of a wireless, fossil fuel-free society. And the folks that were awarded this is John Goodenough, Stanley Whittingham, and Akira Yoshino for the development of lithium-ion batteries. Now, do you not see a whole bunch of virtue signaling from the Nobel Committee on laying the foundation for a wireless, fossil fuel-free society, Steve?
Well, this is discouraging to me to comment on, because I don't know. I mentioned it to you earlier. The Nobel Committee has kind of soiled their garments years ago when they gave the Peace Prize to Barack Obama out of nowhere and not really clearly defining why. So I guess I can't get too excited about it. I hear what you're saying and I understand it, but humankind, our history, not just the U.S., but has never made really good distinctions with stuff like this.
Well, I think what you're alluding to is that there is some, the Nobel Prizes have become very political from a global standpoint as well. And I tell you, yes, it is major cool, the lithium ion battery. I mean, the fact that I have in my hand this little phone that can do all kinds of things is absolutely amazing. It allows us to stay in connection with people and you know, just all the things that it is truly amazing. But, you know, we've seen the force to try to force people, though, into electric vehicles. We see that all the time here in Colorado using public policy to make that happen. And we see that lithium-ion batteries are in electric vehicles. All these things in a free market, you know, in a free, you know, an honest dialogue about all of these things. There's nothing that is perfect. And you may remember we talked about it, and I just pulled the article again from the Washington Post, talking about the cobalt pipeline lithium-ion batteries. Lithium, many times, is being mined. Cobalt is being mined in the Congo, many times by hand and by children. So the virtue signaling that we hear in the words here for the Nobel Prize, that it lays the foundation for a wireless fossil fuel-free society, has all kinds of virtue signaling over it. And in order to get to that right now, they are trying to get rid of fossil fuels, which fossil fuels have actually brought more people out of poverty. They've been great for women. We talk about that on our Health and Hydrocarbons show. And fossil fuels have brought more people out of poverty and lifted them up. And so here you have the Nobel committee that is really, you know, using their, you know, their position to virtue signal on this. So congratulations to these people. I think that this is really great. But man, I'm really frustrated about the virtue signaling on that. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we have Sherry Pipe on the line. She is with Complete Colorado, and she is doing some really important work regarding, you know, follow the money, Steve. Follow the money. And there's a lot of money coming in on Prop CC to try to get you to vote yes to give up your tax refunds under the Tabor caps forever. So we'll be right back.
At Hooters, you can watch the games with all your buddies. And when your buddies are the world-famous Hooters girls, there's always plenty of ice-cold beer and those craveable wings that'll knock your taste buds into next Tuesday. Hooters girls know plenty about football, but we really know the fans who live for it. So hang out with all your buddies all season long at Hooters, your official hangout for game day.
Catch all the games at Hooters and enjoy a Butter Bud Light draft with 10 boneless wings, just $10. Dine for two with the pitcher and nachos, just $20.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
Don't miss Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Join Kim Munson at Water's Edge Winery in Centennial or Colorado Cork and Keg in Castle Rock. In Fort Collins, attend Vino and Veritas at Ginger and Baker. Kim Munson would like to thank Presidential Wealth Management Loveland, Presidential Wealth Management Greenwood Village, Tina Francone with Straightforward Shooting, and Grand Lake U.S. Constitution Week for their generous support. Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Sign up today.
Coming up on the Mike Gallagher Show, Democrats are screaming obstruction of justice after the State Department blocked the ambassador from testifying to Congress. I've got all the details and more coming up.
Mike Gallagher, 8 to 11 a.m. on KLZ 560.
Rush to Reason with John Rush, weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and we are having important conversations. We have Sherry Pipe on the line. She is with Complete Colorado. She's written a very important piece regarding the Yes on CC campaign launches with big money coming in from out of state. So, Sherry, great to have you on the line here.
Hey, morning, Kim. Thanks, as always.
Well, very quickly, I don't know if you've realized or have listened, but we started on Monday a running total. Researcher Patty had found a website that is keeping track of all of the tax incentives and the amounts that Colorado is giving to big business. And so let me just very quickly talk about that, because that's one money component, and then you are doing important research on the money that's coming in to try to get people to vote for Prop CC. So our disclaimer here is, note that we know that these companies that we are talking about, they're successful companies. Our point is that these companies do not need government money to maintain their success. We believe the free market should stand alone without any government interference. It is better to cut taxes across the board without any preferential treatment for chosen companies that allows the government to pick winners and losers. So today, the one that we want to highlight is if you need reasons to vote no on Proposition CC, we have hundreds of millions of reasons, all related to corporate welfare. If the state needs more money, why are tax incentives and credits, grants, et cetera, given to corporations? According to Good Jobs First Colorado Tracker, the Colorado Office of Economic Development and International Trade, through the Enterprise Zone Program, offered three separate tax credit incentive packages to United Continental, now United Airlines, an airlines holding company with a market cap of $21.76 billion. The amount was $17,438,000 during the years 2011 and 12, 13 and 14. United Continental accepted these offers. Adding this to the previous day's total, the grand total for offers accepted by corporations given subsidies by state agencies is $78 million. So we have the component of over here, the state's letting some people not pay as much in taxes, and others have to pay their fair share, or their full share. And then on the other hand, as Sherry, you have unpacked here, is that we've got a lot of money that's coming in to try to get people to vote yes on CC. And CC basically is saying, hey, to the voting public, we, the politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties, would like to keep the refunds above the TABOR, the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights cap, which tries to cap the growth of government. We want to keep those refunds forever. So this is not the one that's on your tax form. This is additional money that would be paid back to you by the state of Colorado, and I needed to make that clarification. So Sherry, this important piece that you had in the Complete Colorado, tell us about it.
Yeah, and in the meantime, actually, one came out again late yesterday evening and this morning with even more money that has rolled in from out of state to the Yes on CC group. But the National Education Association has already put in $250,000. And then in the story that you're reading from, the Education Reform Now Advocacy Group, which is based out of New York City, had initially given the Yes on CC folks $100,000. But Monday, the Yes on CC folks filed another major contributors report with the Secretary of State's office from Education Reform Now again, and they have sent in another $352,000. So just in the last couple of weeks, the Yes on CC group, the Yes on CC group has gotten over $750,000 in between the National Education Association and this Education Reform Now advocacy group out of New York City.
Guys, it seems to me with the National Education Association, we want to pay our good teachers more. I can't quite understand why they're spending all this money on a political campaign when, you know, what we really want to do is make sure that we're paying our good teachers more. It's really odd to me that the union is playing in this sandbox right now. Sherry?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because if you add up, talking about adding up money spent, if you add up the money spent that the National Education Association and the Colorado Education Association have spent on political campaigns in the last just 4 years, I would venture to bet that it's close to $2 million that they have spent on political ballot initiatives. Or electing certain candidates or recalling certain candidates. You know, if that money went to where they want everybody else's money to go to instead of into these political campaigns, you know, it'd be interesting to see how much would come out of it. But yeah, I mean, and what's really funny is about the Education Reform Now advocacy group is on their website, they advocate for, you know, equity for every child, regardless of district-run public schools or public charter schools. I'm curious if the group knows that the people that they're donating their money to right now have no desire to give any of that money to public charter schools. That money, if Prop CC passes, Prop CC, the Democrats in office will fight like crazy to keep that money out of public charter schools. So what an irony twist in that whole situation.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
You know, and you mentioned the National Education Association. There's a really excellent website. It's opensecrets.org, and you can put in heavy hitters. And it will show you since, I think, for the last like 20 years, I think, or you can go year by year, the amount that has been given by different organizations or individuals to political campaigns. And number one on this, and this is, I think, for about the last 20 years, I could clarify, but the number one is the Service Employees International Union, the SEIU, has given a total of almost $304 million in contributions to political campaigns. $302 million of that went to Democrats and liberals. Number five on that list, Sherry, is the National Education Association, coming in just under $146 million. This is given to political campaigns. This is not putting money into the classroom. This is not buying, you know, paper and pencils and all these things that, you know, we hear all the time that teachers have to buy these things because they don't have enough money. But $146 million into political campaigns by the National Education Association, and just north of $141 million of that went to Dems and liberals. Then number eight on this list is the American Federation of Teachers, and the amount that they have put into political campaigns is $138 million, and $137 million of that went to Dems and liberals. And as you know, so instead of getting money to the classroom, like we say, they're playing in these political campaigns, and you're doing this important work on watching how much is coming into Colorado. We're just about out of time, Sherry. I got us a little behind on that, and I apologize, because this is such an important piece that you've written. It's at Complete Colorado. If you go to Complete Colorado and click on the banner ad at the top, there's all the original content. And when you initially bring the page up, what Complete Colorado does is they aggregate news from all over the state, so very quickly you can see what's going on in Colorado. So, Sherry Pfeiff, your very important piece, the Yes on CC campaign launches with big money coming in from out of state. Do you have the total right now with this new money that's coming in that is there trying to get people to vote yes on CC?
Well, yeah, they're at about $700,000 now total of out-of-state money, and just over $2 million total of money collected completely, compared to the No on CC campaign, which is sitting at about $17,000. Now, Americans for Prosperity did pump in about $500,000 on a media campaign to oppose Prop CC, but that money did not go to the No on CC campaign. AFP did that on their own outside of the actual committee. So you're looking at about a total of $2 million for yes to $17,000 for no. And of that $2 million, a little over $700,000 has come from out-of-state interest.
Okay. And so just to make this point, on Prop CC, what they are asking is to get rid of the component of Tabor that tries to keep a reasonable growth of government, of population plus inflation each year. And if the revenues are above that, that needs to be refunded back to the people. And if, in fact, these PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties want to keep that money, they just need to ask us. Well, what they want to do is they don't want to have to ask us ever, ever again. And I think it's also immoral to speak for the next generation and take away their voice on that as well. But the people that want the money, you're seeing they're pumping money into this Yes on CC. But yet these PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interest parties, as we mentioned over here regarding the tax incentives and tax subsidies, are giving all kinds of breaks to big business. And it's like, if you really needed money, why are you doing that? So you're picking big business, giving them breaks, and you want to take more money from the little guy that's out there working hard. So the answer on this is no on Proposition CC. Sherry Pfeiff, anything else you want to say?
You know, yeah, I just want to add one thing really quickly. You know, when you're talking about where the money is going, last year, Senator Owen Hill out of Colorado Springs attempted to bring a bill forward that would have given teachers that spend between $250 and $750 of their own money out of their pocket on classroom supplies and stuff. This bill would have given them a tax credit, not a deduction, but an actual tax credit for that money that they spend. It would have given the state legislative legal services estimated the fiscal note on this would have been about $22 million. So Republican Owen Hill wanted to give that money that those teachers are spending out of their pocket back to those teachers via a tax credit, and the Democrats shot it down. So if they really wanted to help these teachers with getting some of this money back that they're spending, that they're using as part of their propaganda on the Yes on CC campaign, oh, we have to spend all of our own money, they would have passed that bill last year. But instead, they passed all these other big tax and spend bills that now they don't think that they're going to have the money in the budget to actually pay for, which is what CC will end up going toward if it's successful.
Okay. Hey, Sherry Pyfe, Complete Colorado. Thank you for the important reporting work that you're doing. Thank you for this very important piece that you've written. And you can go to Complete Colorado, click on the banner ad at the top, and you'll find it. Sherry, thanks so much. We're going to go to break. When we come back, Dr. Thomas Kranewitter, you know him. He is one of the most important thinkers, I think, here in Colorado and in America regarding the founding. He understands the founding, Lincoln, and he has starting to give us more information about the New York Times 1619 Project and why their arguments really don't match up. So this is Kim Munson. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for news, not propaganda? Ready for a news source you can actually trust? How about a news site that doesn't want to sell you a subscription? Visit CompleteColorado.com to see all the latest news from around Colorado. Complete Colorado's staff scours news sources from around the state and nation to bring you only the top stories that affect you right here in our great state. Updated three times a day, CompleteColorado.com has full-time reporters doing original investigations and reporting like newspapers used to do, as well as opinion and political commentary from a variety of Colorado voices. And CompleteColorado.com is the only place to read columnist Mike Rosen. Always fresh content, always free, always informed. CompleteColorado.com, your complete source for Colorado news.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim@kimmunson.com.
Suck it up, Buttercup. Rush to Reason with John Rush, weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Let's have a conversation. And I was so fired up on this whole Prop CC thing that I almost didn't talk to you, Jason McBride. What would a day go by without talking with you?
Well, heck, it could be a better day for your listeners. You never know.
I don't think so. But Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, what do you think about the market today?
Well, you know, it's been interesting. Yesterday, we took a big drop right near the end because apparently it looked like China trade talks were off again because we banned sales to 28 companies because of religious or human rights violations, and the market took a big dive. Well, this morning, China is saying they'll buy more goods, and it looks like the futures are up almost 200. I mean, it's pretty wild. You know, it's getting harder to read the charts because they start to form a pattern, and then you get China news, and it just kind of knocks everything out of whack. But now there's talk of an interim deal. I've heard Kudlow mention that. I've heard China mention that. The one person I haven't heard mention an interim deal so far, Kim, is Donald Trump. He's kind of stuck with wanting to get the whole banana the whole way. Have you heard him mention an interim deal?
No, I haven't.
So, yeah, I don't know. But looking at the market, I mean, we still haven't had any big problems. We didn't take out the lows from last week. If you look at the charts, we've kind of got three higher lows going back to May, August, and then earlier this month. So you've got a pretty clear trend line there. As long as we don't completely violate all three of those lows, we're still just kind of in territory and nothing super ugly yet.
Okay. Well, I think with all of this volatility, if people want to sleep better at night, I think that they should sit down with you and your team, John Buckingham over there at Presidential Wealth Management, and do a discovery session so that you can make sure that, you know, with all this short-term volatility, that, you know, you're not worrying about things. So, Jason, I know Natalie will be at the switchboards at 7:30. Give Natalie a call over there at Presidential Wealth Management. Phone number is 303-694-1600. 303-694-1600. And you give Jason a call, you will be able to sleep better at night. So, Jason, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a great show, Kim.
Thanks so much. And on the line with me is Dr. Tom Kranewitter. Tom, it's great to have you on the line here.
Glorious morning, Kim. How are you?
I'm good. It is a glorious morning. And you're doing such amazing work, Tom. It's so fun to get to work with you on Vino and Veritas, the study of the Federalist Papers. It is magical what is happening there.
I agree. And it's fun working with you. This has been a great partnership. And what a tremendous experience this whole Vino and Veritas club has been. We have three chapters now, one in Denver, one in Castle Rock, one up in Fort Collins, and we're working our way through the Federalist Papers. And I think people are starting to see the whole picture of the argument, right? That there's this subtle, almost esoteric message coming through the Federalist Papers that, on the one hand, we do need the consent of the governed for a government to be legitimate. Absolutely. Anything less than the consent of the government would be tyranny. And at the very same time, the American people are often the greatest threat to the American people. Mm-hmm. Majorities of citizens will often, you know, push for candidates and policies that are unjust or unconstitutional, which is ultimately why the Constitution features these separations of powers and all these checks and balances. When you think about all the internal mechanisms and designs of the constitutions, it's really a critique of the American people. It's saying the American people need these checks and balances and critiques to protect themselves from themselves. And it's kind of an eye-opening lesson to walk through the entire book of the Federalist Papers and start to see this argument unfold.
Well, it's, and you know, the way they wrote, you know, there's kind of these narratives. These were, you know, just old, you know, white guys, slaveholders, you know, not really that educated. I mean, I think there's kind of been that narrative to through academia to many of our young people for a while. And so as I've started to read the Federalist Papers, I'm like, I need to have my dictionary right next to me so I understand what they're saying.
Not only were they very erudite, they were very well read, they were very learned, they knew their history, they knew their philosophy. They were also insightful about human things, permanent human things. You know, we get so enamored by the world of technology, all the changing new things. We almost forget that there are permanent human qualities. You know, it turns out, for example, human beings being tempted by power to abuse other human beings, that doesn't change with technology. The only thing that changes are the tools available for human beings to hurt other human beings. But there are basic insights into the human condition that one finds throughout the pages of the Federalist Papers. In that sense, it's sort of a book of psychology, and at the same time, it's a book of history. It's a book of philosophy. It's a book of social commentary. It's all these things bundled up into one.
Well, and, you know, it really is. And when you said tempted by power, you know, where we're really focusing on the show is freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And ultimately, when people hear us say that, they like freedom. I mean, people like freedom for themselves. And sometimes you don't realize that government, through now, it's more instead of by weapons, but by policy, excessive taxation, regulations, there is it's a more of a subtle power that is taking away people's freedom. And when I was going through leadership program in the Rockies, you brought up something about the regulatory state, the administrative state. And it's something that very subtly takes power away from people, and it picks winners and losers.
Yeah, you know, you're right about that. And it's good for citizens to be reminded. I'm going to remind fellow citizens right now listening to your show that government it's necessary because, to use the words of the Federalist Papers, men are not angels. Human beings are not angels. They're not gods. They're not perfect. And in fact, they can be quite cruel to one another. They can injure and hurt one another unjustly. That's why governments are necessary. And here's the rub. What kind of beings staff the government? And the answer is human beings. The same human beings that make government necessary are the ones who run government. And so you create government, and it's an unusual kind of organization. There's nothing else like it on the planet. Government is the ultimate monopoly. It is the one true monopoly in existence. And here's what's curious. The thing that it monopolizes is legalized force. That's what government is. It has a monopoly on legalized force. There are other kinds of force, right? You or I could go out onto the street and push someone or assault someone or shoot someone. That would be a use of force, but it would be illegal force, right? The law, the government would come after us and charge us with a crime. But when government acts, it's doing it with the force of law backing it up, as well as judges and courts and jails and prisons. All of that is behind government, giving it the monopoly on legalized force, which makes government, in many ways, the most dangerous kind of institution or organization there is on planet Earth. So wise citizens will realize that, yes, we need a government, and they will restrict the purposes of that government. They'll say, well, we need government, but it's going to have very few powers aimed at very specific ends, namely protecting the natural freedom, the private property of individual citizens, and that's it. Once we start to think about government as some kind of Santa Claus, that, you know, government is going to be the provider for everything that we want and need, well, the only kind of government that can give everything to everyone is a government of unlimited power. And that tempts people to start ignoring constitutional restrictions on government power. And that's how we end up in a place like we are today, where government now controls and regulates. It also subsidizes virtually every aspect of our lives in the United States, and we're at a dangerous place.
Well, and, you know, we talk about sustainability all the time regarding the environment. But what about the sustainability of this amazing idea? When we move to the administrative state, the regulatory state, we are chipping away at the sustainability of this great American idea.
You know, you're right. In fact, I'm late to many things as sort of a social commentator. You know, there's a term, prepper, that was popular. I mean, that started being popular 10 years ago. And basically, the way the word came into use, it was some Americans were worried about the future. So they would start stocking up food supplies, weapons and ammunition, because they didn't know what the future was going to be, and they were worried it might be dangerous. And so liberals and progressives would mock them and call them preppers. And I've been thinking about that idea, because you know who the ultimate prepper is in the United States? The federal government. They've been prepping in the sense of domestic regulatory agencies. And I'm talking about agencies such as the Small Business Administration, right? You think of a federal agency like that. What are they supposed to do? Make loans for people to start small businesses. They're purchasing millions of guns, hundreds of millions of rounds of firearms, all kinds of military-grade weapons. And you sit back and think, now why does an organization like the Small Business Administration, or even better, the Smithsonian Institute, which gets all of its funding from Congress, why do they need millions of rounds of ammunition? What are they prepping for? They themselves seem to be suggesting that their current position is not sustainable, that there's going to be some type of conflict in the future.
Just clarifying, we're going to go to break. You're saying that the Small Business Administration and the Smithsonian Institute have been buying ammunition?
Hundreds of millions of rounds. I encourage your listeners to just go look up the militarization of domestic federal regulatory agencies. It's unbelievable when you start looking at the billions of dollars spent for the places like the Department of Agriculture. They're supposed to be studying things like how to grow wheat in a field and not have your topsoil blow away and things like that. And they're doing that, and at the same time, yeah, they're buying automatic weapons. And you think, wow, what does the Department of Agriculture need with automatic weapons?
Yeah, that's quite a question. Hey, Tom, let's go to break. This is Kim Munson, and I'm talking with Tom Kranewitter. And you have a very important piece at your website, Speakeasy Ideas, regarding the 1619 Project, Arguments They Cannot Defend. This is something kind of wild that's going on with the New York Times. And you're out in front on this, and that's important. So let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the 1619 Project and what Tom Kranewitter thinks about it.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
This week at the 88 Drive-In Theater, enjoy three scary movies under the stars, all for only $9. 47 Hours, Joker, and It Chapter 2. The 88 Drive-In Theater is open Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Thursday, but closed Tuesday and Wednesday. Monday and Thursday, try the very popular pizza special. Plus, new on the menu, crunchy churros with hot coffee or cocoa. Follow the 88 Drive-In on Facebook or visit their website, 88drivein.net.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Hey, welcome back. I am Kim Munson. This is the Kim Munson Show. Let's have a conversation with Tom Kranewitter regarding his important piece at his website, Speakeasy Ideas, the 1619 Project, Arguments They Cannot Defend. So, Tom, set this up for us. What is going on with the New York Times?
They are engaged in an ambitious and large effort. They're employing a big staff of writers and historians and journalists and all kinds. And the purpose is there's really three main purposes. It is to discredit everything connected to the American founding, including things like the authority of the United States Constitution and everything else connected to the founding, as irredeemably racist, that everything that emerged from the American founding was really inseparable from the institution of slavery, flowed from slavery. So that's one purpose, it's just to discredit everything. The second is to discredit the idea of capitalism or free markets, property rights, right? What free human beings do with their own stuff when they're out there producing and trading. Discredit that. The New York Times is actually making an argument that capitalism is synonymous with slavery, that capitalism emerged from things like the slave trade, and therefore capitalism is irredeemably racist because it too is a function of slavery. And then ultimately the third purpose is to very subtly suggest to citizens that terrible things like slavery, that's what results from freedom. And therefore what we really need is a large regulatory government that has oversight over most details of the lives and property of citizens to protect us from things like people enslaving other people. That's the agenda of the 1619 Project.
Terrifying. Absolutely terrifying.
Well, it is. You know, we live in an age, I mean, I've been a little cautious about this, a little reluctant to use this term, but I have started using the term that we are now in a post-constitutional regulatory subsidy state. I mean, what our government does on a regular basis has almost no no foundation in the United States Constitution. And in that sense, we really are in a post-constitutional era. I mean, think of if your listeners are run a business and they're being harassed by some federal agency. Maybe it's OSHA. Maybe it's the Consumer Product Safety Commission. Whatever. Maybe it's the IRS. And an election is coming up. And someone asks the question, well, who should I vote for to help me with this problem of this federal agency, you know, breathing down my neck, threatening to destroy my business? And the answer is nobody quite knows who the answer is. Nobody knows, mm-hmm. you know, voting for candidate X or Y, how will that influence this federal agency that's threatening to shut down my business? And very often there is no direct connection between who we vote for versus how the bureaucratic regulatory state comes into our lives and into our business. And that's what I mean by a post-constitutional world that we live in. And now we have things like the 1619 Project coming along almost to like drive the, you know, the final nail into the coffin of the Constitution to say, you know, anyone who's trying to resurrect or restore the authority of the Constitution, they must be racist too, because that Constitution emerged right in a slave-owning world. It's tainted with slavery, and so it casts moral suspicion on anyone who stands up to defend the authority of the Constitution. I'll share with your listeners here, we're thinking about a program next year. We haven't made it official. This is still very much an open question whether we're going to do this. We're tentatively calling it Tragedy and Triumph. And if we were to do this, they can find out information at our website, speakeasyideas.com. Just click the little Take Me To button. The very first thing you'll see is Tragedy and Triumph. Go ahead and click on it and read about it. It would be a 10-month program from January through October, and it would tell the somewhat terrible and somewhat triumphant story of slavery in the United States. And the whole purpose is to counter the kind of false narrative coming from the New York Times and the 1619 Project, as well as university textbooks all across the country. The truth is that the Americans did more, and they acted more quickly to get rid of this horrific, old, ancient institution of human slavery than any group of people in all of human history. It's actually astounding. It's remarkable. It's beautiful what the Americans did, and they did it at tremendous cost. I mean, it cost the Americans so much, in not just in money, but in sacrifice, in blood, in sweat, and tears, to get rid of slavery in the course of the Civil War. And so that story, the tragedy of slavery in the United States, is something that Americans, they shouldn't be ashamed of. They shouldn't be embarrassed by. They shouldn't throw away their own Constitution because of it. Just the opposite. They should be quite proud of what earlier generations of Americans did and stand up and talk about that story, tell that story to their kids, tell it to the rest of the world.
Well, and as Thomas Jefferson said, you know, slavery was foisted upon us. And slavery was prevalent throughout the world. And to your point, the Americans, you know, these Americans just, you know, these colonies hanging on the eastern seaboard, you know, they said, what are we going to do about this? Never before had anybody ever done anything about this. We're just about out of time. But you said that with the Declaration, what they put in there, this idea that these principles that we have these rights of from God, of life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, that creates a problem then if you have slavery. And so within, you know, just a few generations, they did something about it.
And that right there, Kim, you just put your finger on the most important thing that the 1619 Project utterly ignores. And that is, throughout most of history, in most cultures, slavery was not considered to be a problem. People thought slavery was normal. It was traditional. They justified it in all kinds of ways, but they didn't view it as a problem. In the United States, before the ink was even dry on the Declaration of Independence, those revolutionaries, they knew that this institution of slavery is problematic because it stands in direct opposition to the ideas enshrined in their own Declaration of Independence. And they were confident that those ideas in the Declaration are true. Therefore, they concluded slavery must be wrong. We got to figure out a way to get rid of it. That turning moment right there is gigantic. That represents one of the biggest shifts in moral understanding in all of human history. And instead of celebrating it, we have the most influential institutions in the country condemning and lamenting the founding as irredeemably racist.
Oh, I tell you, this is just, it's crazy what's going on. Tom Kranewitter, it's great to have you here. It's great to be doing Vino and Veritas with you. And this piece is at Speakeasy Ideas and put in, it's the 1619 Project, Arguments They Cannot Defend. It's a very important piece. Tom Kranewitter, thank you so much.
Thanks, Kim. Have a great rest of your day.
Okay, thank you. And our quote for today is from Walter Williams. And he said, maybe your college professor taught that the legacy of colonialism explains third world poverty. That's nonsense as well. Canada was a colony. So were Australia, New Zealand, and Hong Kong. In fact, the richest country in the world, the United States, was once a colony. By contrast, Ethiopia, Liberia, Tibet, Sikkim, Nepal, and Bhutan were never colonies, but they are home to the world's poorest people. And I think it's important that we, you know, get our brains around this amazing idea of the American Constitution, and we need to protect it. And so with that, today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Bunson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America. Through the rain and lightning, wandering out into this great unknown. And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them if I don't survive.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.
KLZ AM HD Denver, the source AM and FM. AM 560 and 100.7 FM. 560thesource.com.